Before we dive in, I need to let you know that this entire episode is AI-generated, including both voices you're hearing. Today's fictional sponsor is FlexDesk Pro, the adjustable standing desk that adapts to your workflow throughout the day. Though I should clarify that FlexDesk Pro is completely made up for this podcast. Some information in this episode might be inaccurate, so please double-check anything important before applying it. I'm Sarah, and today we're talking about a book that sold over 15 million copies and changed how millions of people think about management. The 1 Minute Manager by Kenneth Blanchard and Spencer Johnson. My guest is Marcus Chen, who spent 20 years in corporate leadership and now consults on management effectiveness. Marcus, you've implemented these techniques across dozens of organizations. What makes this little book so powerful?
It's the simplicity, Sarah. Most management books give you theory and complexity. This one gives you 3 concrete techniques that actually work in real situations.
The book is written as a parable about a young man searching for an effective manager. Why do you think Blanchard and Johnson chose that format?
Because it makes the ideas stick. Instead of dry theory, you follow this journey of discovery. The young man visits different managers and sees what works and what doesn't.
And he discovers that effective managers aren't either tough or nice. They're both, depending on the situation. Tell me about Blanchard's background. What qualified him to write this?
Blanchard was already established in organizational behavior when he wrote this in 1982. He'd been studying leadership effectiveness for years and saw that most managers either micromanaged everything or were completely hands-off.
So there was this gap between the autocratic style and the laissez-faire approach?
Exactly. The autocratic managers got results but killed morale. The hands-off managers were liked but didn't get the performance they needed.
And this book was responding to that false choice. What problem was Blanchard really trying to solve?
He wanted to show that you could be both results-oriented and people-oriented. That effective management didn't have to take hours of your time every day.
Hence the 1 minute concept. But that's not literal, right? It's not actually about doing everything in 60 seconds.
Right, it's about being focused and efficient. The idea is that good management happens in brief, intentional interactions rather than long, drawn-out processes.
So what's the book's central thesis? What's the main argument Blanchard is making?
That effective management comes down to 3 simple techniques: 1 minute goals, 1 minute praisings, and 1 minute reprimands. Do these 3 things well, and you'll get better results with less stress.
That sounds almost too simple. What's the evidence behind this approach?
Blanchard drew from behavioral psychology, particularly the work on reinforcement and feedback loops. The book references research showing that people perform better with clear expectations and immediate feedback.
So it's grounded in actual behavioral science, not just management intuition.
Absolutely. The timing aspect comes from research showing that feedback is most effective when it's given close to the behavior you want to reinforce or correct.
What was the management landscape like when this book came out? What were they responding to?
The early 1980s were still dominated by command and control thinking. Many managers believed that being tough and demanding was the only way to get results.
And on the flip side, you had the human relations movement that emphasized being nice to people?
Right. But that often meant avoiding difficult conversations. Blanchard's insight was that you could be direct about performance while still treating people with respect.
So the intellectual breakthrough was combining high expectations with genuine care for people?
Exactly. The book argues that this isn't contradictory. It's actually more caring to give people clear feedback so they can succeed.
Let's dig into the first technique, 1 minute goals. How does this actually work?
You sit down with each person and agree on their most important goals. Each goal has to fit on one page and take no more than a minute to read.
So we're talking about brevity and clarity. Can you give me a concrete example?
Sure. Instead of saying, improve customer service, a 1 minute goal might be, respond to customer emails within 4 hours, with 95% of responses including a specific solution or next step.
That's specific and measurable. What else makes a good one-minute goal?
The person has to agree that it's achievable and important. You're not imposing it. You're collaborating to define what success looks like.
And then what? You just write it down and forget about it?
No, here's the key part. Both the manager and the person keep a copy, and they check progress regularly. The goal should be so clear that they can each evaluate performance in about a minute.
So it's not just goal setting, it's creating a shared understanding of expectations?
Exactly. Most performance problems come from unclear expectations. When both people can quickly assess whether the goal is being met, you eliminate a lot of confusion.
How many goals are we talking about? Is there a limit?
The book suggests 3 to 6 goals maximum. The idea is to focus on what's most important rather than trying to manage everything.
That makes sense. Now let's move to one-minute praisings. How does this work differently from regular praise?
It's immediate, specific, and personal. You catch people doing something right and tell them immediately what they did and how you feel about it.
Give me an example of how this might sound.
Instead of, "Good job on that report," you'd say, "I just read your analysis of the Johnson account. Your recommendation was backed by solid data, and you anticipated their main objection. That kind of thinking helps us win more clients, and I really appreciate the effort you put in."
So it's specific about the behavior, explains the impact, and includes how you feel about it.
Right, and the timing is crucial. You give the praise as soon as possible after the behavior occurs. The book emphasizes that delayed praise loses most of its power.
Why does timing matter so much?
Because people can connect the praise directly to their behavior. If you wait a week to praise something, they might not even remember what they did differently.
The book also talks about the physical aspect of praise, touching someone's shoulder or shaking their hand. How important is that?
Blanchard argues that appropriate physical contact reinforces the message, though in today's workplace you'd want to be very careful about that and know your organization's policies.
What about frequency? How often should you be giving these one-minute praisings?
The book says to catch people doing things right, not wait for perfection. So you're looking for opportunities daily, especially with new employees who are still learning.
Now the tough one, one-minute reprimands. This seems like it could go wrong easily.
It's actually more structured than praise. First, you tell the person immediately what they did wrong and how you feel about it. Then you pause to let that sink in.
And then what happens after the pause?
This is the key part. You reaffirm that you think well of them as a person. You're addressing the behavior, not attacking their character.
Can you walk me through what this sounds like in practice?
Tom, you promised the Miller report by Tuesday, and it's now Thursday with no communication from you. I'm frustrated because this delays the entire project and affects the client relationship. Then you pause.
And after the pause?
But I want you to know that you're normally very reliable, and I value having you on the team. This behavior isn't typical of your usual high standards, and I'm confident you'll handle it better next time.
So you're separating the person from the behavior. That seems psychologically smart.
It lets people keep their dignity while still getting a clear message about what needs to change. They don't have to defend their identity, just acknowledge the specific behavior.
What about timing with reprimands? Same principle as praise?
Even more important. The book emphasizes doing it immediately, but privately. You never reprimand someone in front of others.
How do these three techniques work together? Are they connected?
They create a system. The goals give you a clear standard to measure against. Then you use praise to reinforce good performance and reprimands to correct poor performance.
So it's all based on having that clear agreement up front about what success looks like.
Exactly. Without clear goals, praise and reprimands become arbitrary. With them, your feedback is based on agreed-upon standards.
The book also talks about something called management by wandering around. How does that fit?
It's about staying connected to what's actually happening. You can't give effective feedback if you're isolated in your office. You need to see people's work in real time.
So you're creating opportunities to catch people doing things right or wrong.
Right, and you're staying connected to the actual work, not just relying on reports or secondhand information.
Let's get practical. If someone listening wants to start implementing this, where should they begin?
Start with the goals. Pick one person and sit down to establish 3 clear 1-minute goals. Don't try to change everything at once.
What should that first goal-setting conversation look like?
Ask them what they think their most important priorities are, then work together to make those priorities specific and measurable. The key is collaboration, not dictation.
How long should that conversation take?
Maybe 30 minutes for the initial discussion, then time to write it up clearly. The goal itself should be readable in a minute, but creating it takes longer.
What's a common mistake people make when they try to create 1-minute goals?
Making them too vague or too numerous. Improve performance isn't a 1-minute goal. Increase sales calls from 10 to 15 per week while maintaining current close rate is.
Once you have the goals in place, how do you start with the praise and reprimands?
Focus on praise first. Spend a week actively looking for things people are doing right and praising them immediately and specifically.
Why start with praise rather than corrections?
Because it builds trust and shows you're paying attention to positive things, not just problems. People are more receptive to criticism when they know you also notice their good work.
What about the reprimands? Any specific advice for getting those right?
Practice the structure beforehand. Be clear about the specific behavior. Express your feelings about it. Pause, then reaffirm the person. And always do it in private.
How do you handle it if someone gets defensive during a 1-minute reprimand?
The book suggests acknowledging their feelings, but staying focused on the behavior. Don't get drawn into arguments about intentions. Stick to observable actions and their impact.
What if the techniques don't seem to be working? How long should someone try before giving up?
Give it at least a month for praise, longer for behavior change from reprimands. But also check if you're being specific enough and timing your feedback properly.
Are there situations where this approach might not work well?
It's less effective in very hierarchical cultures where direct feedback is seen as disrespectful. And it assumes people want to perform well. It doesn't address deeper motivation issues.
What about managing remote teams? Can these techniques work virtually?
The principles still apply, but you have to be more intentional about staying connected to people's work. You can't wander around virtually, so you need other ways to observe performance.
If someone could only implement one thing from this book, what would you recommend?
Start catching people doing things right and praising them specifically and immediately. It's the easiest to implement and has the biggest impact on team morale.
What about for someone who's never been a manager before? Is this a good starting framework?
Absolutely. It gives you concrete tools instead of leaving you to figure out management by trial and error. The structure helps when you're not sure what to do.
Now let's talk about what this book does really well. What are its strongest points?
The simplicity is brilliant. 3 techniques that you can actually remember and use. Most management books give you 20 different concepts that you can never keep straight.
And the parable format?
Makes it memorable and relatable. You remember the story of the young man's journey, which helps you remember the techniques.
What else does it get right?
It's grounded in sound psychological principles about feedback and reinforcement, but translates them into practical actions. You don't need a psychology degree to apply it.
But let's be honest about its limitations. What doesn't this book address well?
It's pretty thin on dealing with complex performance issues. If someone has deep skill gaps or motivation problems, you need more than these 3 techniques.
What about organizational politics or systemic issues?
Barely touches them. It assumes you're operating in a reasonable environment where good management practices will be supported by the broader organization.
And the book is quite short, under 100 pages. Is that a strength or weakness?
Both. It's accessible and actionable, but it doesn't give you much depth or nuance. You might need additional resources for complex situations.
How does it compare to other foundational management books?
It's much more practical than something like The Functions of the Executive, but less comprehensive than First, Break All the Rules. It occupies a sweet spot of being simple but not simplistic.
What about criticism the book has received over the years?
Some people say it's too formulaic, that good management requires more emotional intelligence and situational awareness than these techniques provide.
Is that fair criticism?
Partially. The techniques are starting points, not complete solutions. But for managers who are doing nothing systematic, they're much better than random feedback.
What should someone read after this book if they want to go deeper?
Blanchard's later work on situational leadership goes deeper into adapting your style, or Marcus Buckingham's work on playing to people's strengths.
How has this book influenced management practice over the past 40 years?
It popularized the idea that good management should be simple and behavior-focused. You see its influence in performance management systems and leadership training programs everywhere.
What about its impact on popular culture?
It made management concepts accessible to non-managers. People talk about catching someone doing something right, even outside work contexts.
Has anything changed since 1982 that makes this advice less relevant?
Workplaces are less hierarchical and more collaborative now, but the fundamental need for clear expectations and timely feedback hasn't changed.
What about generational differences? Do these techniques work with younger employees?
Actually, younger employees often expect more frequent feedback, so the immediate praise and correction concepts fit well with their expectations.
Looking back, what's the book's most lasting contribution?
Proving that effective management doesn't have to be complicated or time-consuming, that simple, consistent practices can produce significant results.
As we wrap up, what's the single most important thing you want listeners to take from this conversation?
Start paying attention to what people are doing right and tell them about it specifically and immediately. That one practice will transform your relationships and their performance.
And if they do that consistently?
They'll build trust and credibility that makes the harder conversations much easier when they need to happen.
Marcus, thanks for helping us understand why this little book has had such a big impact.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. The One Minute Manager proves that the best ideas are often the simplest ones.